Hey, everybody, welcome to Engaging the Phenomenon. And today we have a special guest, Ruben Langdon. Now, Ruben has been involved in the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure and also has a show on Gaia called Interviews with Extra Dimensionals. So, welcome, Ruben.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, I hear you also have an interesting background in Hollywood and video games too. That I found that fascinating because I must have heard your voice a million times, right?
I see you're wearing the Dragon Ball Z shirt there, sort of supporting the fandom a little bit. So, totally.
Oh, big yeah. time.
That's where I got my start.
You did the voice for Ken Masters in Street Fighter?
Yep, Ken Masters and Dante are kind of the Dante and Devil May Cry are kind of the two big titles I'm known for. I did the motion capture and produced many of the Resident Evil franchise, many, I guess, renditions of that. So Resident Evil 5, 6, some of the offshoots and the films and stuff. So I've always been doing the motion capture work for that character for many years.
That is so cool. And, I love Street Fighter, and I remember playing Devil May Cry when it first came out. So that is small world. But getting to the Citizens here.
They've been going for a long time, these franchises. It's been nice to have kind of reoccurring work and go to conventions, interact with fans. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Citizen, so you go from all that stuff and you found yourself wound up in the disclosure process somehow. How did that happen?
Yeah, I should say it started while I was working on the film Avatar, playing an alien. I was the main stunt double for Jake Sully and did a lot of the background Navi stunts and movements, played some of those characters. And it was during that time, four-year period, that I was working on the film on and off, also running my own production company and producing. We were working on Resident Evil 5 at the time. So long window, but somewhere in the middle there in 2007, I had an incredible sighting in Burbank, California, Glendale, California, which is right next to Burbank. And it sort of... threw me for a loop. Twisted my reality. I couldn't figure it out. Just prior to that, I guess I had started to expose myself to films like The Zeitgeist. YouTube was just coming online and watching a lot of these different types of films and video, seeing the Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project that I didn't even know had happened. YouTube was great for getting that information out. So my mind was starting to be massaged and melted. Also working as the actor on Avatar, we were exposed to a lot of indigenous cultures and different ideas and belief systems. That was sort of our homework, was to the Navi were sort of the a compilation of all of the world's indigenous cultures. And that was sort of the model for what the Navi was supposed to be. So I had to do my homework to play one and got exposed to a lot of different ideas and different belief systems. So I was kind of primed in that sense. And then this thing happened, had a sighting. And then, as Jeremy Corbell says, I had to weaponize my curiosity. And that was it. Jeremy and I were friends at the time already. I had no idea he was into UFOs. And then in 2010, he started telling me he was, filming John Lear and was telling me the Bob Lazar story. And I had done a little research up to then, but it just, our paths sort of reemerged. We were doing films and television, and he was teaching me his super quantum jujitsu moves for the film stuff. Yeah. And we were pals in that area. And then it was like, oh my God, you've seen things, I've seen things. Let's go figure this out. So we would be cooperating and collaborating on a lot of different things from that time onward till now.
Yeah, so the Citizens Hearing Disclosure was actually really big. I remember watching it, like, you know, when it was building up and then when it actually occurred in 2013. And, you know, again, like you, I got involved pretty early. I saw the Disclosure Project on YouTube.
Right.
And I was like, I can't believe this actually happened in Washington, D.C. with all these top level witnesses. And I had no idea about it until like maybe 2007, 2008. And, you know, I had my own encounters and sightings and stuff. But so the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, you were actually pretty involved in that, right?
Yeah, it was sort of my it's been my baby for many years. Through a partnership with another ufologist, we created a company, CHD2 Productions, and then brought Jeremy in because he sort of birthed the idea. And then Jeremy came in, and we were all together working very diligently on putting this thing together. I was running my production company at the time. I had a motion capture visual effects studio in Marina Del Rey we were doing a lot of video games, like I mentioned, the Resident Evil series and Devil May Cry and these types of things. We kind of put together a pitch package and put it out there. And we had a Thomas Clearwater, an amazing investor from Canada, who put up the money. And we moved forward. We got started reaching out and getting people and getting everything together, and it got bigger and bigger. And before I know it, we were in Washington, D.C. with 40 witnesses and 6 former members of Congress. And I had to kept pinching myself. I'm like, is this really happening? And there's a lot of weird things that, when you get involved in this field, the UFO field, especially at that level with these people, a lot of strange things happen, and they were happening for sure. I won't go into too much detail, but let's just say that when you're dealing with the most secret topic and you go into those high levels of government that have been keeping it a secret for so long, you're stirring up the hornet's nest. There's people out there who want the information out, and there's people out there that don't want the information out. So it was kind of getting caught in that storm of wacky, weird things. And I'm sure our space brothers up there also, you know, have strings they're pulling and making things go certain directions. So let's just say things get really weird and wacky when you start dealing with this phenomenon on all levels, but especially when you get into the government levels.
Yeah, for sure. And so you were actually there the whole time with the film crew and all that, recording?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was my, we hired a crew to film the hearings, but simultaneously I was, my production company and my small crew, we were filming a documentary feature. That was the initial plan around the hearings and behind the scenes. So I had my guys there, and then it was quite an undertaking. There was a lot of moving parts, and just to make everything flow and go in order. Right up until the last minute, we didn't even know if it was gonna happen on time, and with all the obstacles that kept popping up, and it did. And the first couple of days were pretty bumpy, but once we got the flow going, it started to sort of self-organize, and our wonderful witnesses were amazing, and they kind of took the initiative and really got things going, so it would happen smoothly. And the Congress members too, they were all super cool, and got once they found their flow, it was really something to see, as it is now available for everyone to see on YouTube.
Yeah, and just for everybody listening, you guys have been uploading videos about every week, of the footage. So I'm going to be putting a link to that in the description, because, you know, I've been going through it again myself, and I'm like, this is incredible stuff. I mean, you know, really, you know, the witnesses and the researchers too, which the Disclosure Project didn't really have. And I remember one of the speeches that Richard Dolan gave, somebody took a clip from it and uploaded it like years ago, and it's the best UFO speech ever.
It is. It's like the most epic 10 minutes on UFOs. Richard's a rock star. He's so good and so articulate with everything, and so well researched. For sure. I think that, what was that day? We'll be continuing. So Jeremy and I are putting up little highlight pieces. He's swamped right now, obviously, with these videos he's been releasing. The mainstream media is he's like on every mainstream media talk show and everything. But as soon as he gets a moment, we're putting up little clips. So we'll probably take that 10 minute. It might be a little long, but we might cut it up a little bit and put some of those gems.
It was supposed to become a documentary, I think, called Truth Embargo. And that's the first time I actually heard of Jeremy Corbell that I can recall, was that when this event was being put together and I'm doing research on it. Whatever happened to the documentary?
Well, as I mentioned, which you probably saw in Nap's interview. The whole project was just crazy. One of the aspects was, it was funded in silver bullion. Thomas Clearwater wanted to give us, you know, the funding, but it was all in silver bullion that had to be minted and sold for the production. And at the time, silver was, you know, was heading towards its all-time high, which was good for us because we're like, oh, well, then our budget just gets bigger, because it's basically on the day of the signing of the contract, we got invested $1 million, close to $1 million. It was like $1.2 million in silver bullion for the value of whatever that was at the day. But as we were getting closer to production, silver was going up. We're like, this is great for our production. We're going to have more money to film with. And literally, I think it was like, we had two things, Boston bombings, and then silver tanked like within a week of the actual hearings going off. So a couple weeks before that, the Boston bombings happens, because we were getting momentum with the news and media, and that was sort of the goal. This whole thing was, the goal was to activate the media, to get them involved as they are now. It seems the media never took this subject matter seriously. And that was sort of the activist side of this production, was to get them to take it seriously and then hopefully chip away at that truth embargo. Then the Boston bombings happened, and we were getting momentum with getting the word out, as far as, you know, people were curious, activists are going to be in Washington, D.C. And that's weird. You know, is it tinfoil hats, or is this, should we take this seriously? We started to get some of those news clips, and then when that bombings happened, all of that went away. We lost all of our any type of news capabilities of getting the word out, other than just, you know, the smaller coast to coast and these guys that covered it already. And then when silver tanked, it took the largest drop that it had ever taken in history, which was about, you know, a good 15 to 20% of our overall budget was immediately gone. So we were trying to liquidate silver to cover the budget, and it just, it was a doom and gloom scenario. So we didn't know what we were going to do. We thought, okay, well, let's just get the hearings. We're already scheduled. Let's finish the hearings and let's put the documentary on hold, and maybe we can raise some more money later. Let's just see how this plans out. And that's what we did. So we finished the hearings, and then our budget was pretty much wiped. We didn't have any money left over to film the documentary, which we were slated to film with Jeremy and have a budget to do that. But I actually put in my company credit card just to make sure the hearings itself would be finished, because we didn't even have enough in the bank to do that. So it wiped out our budget, and it wiped my personal and my company budget out too. We it was a rough time just to get it done.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned what you were expecting, but how big of an impact did you think that the citizens hearing on disclosure was going to have at the time?
Well, at the time I was naive. I didn't understand the truth embargo and how strong it was. So I thought, I had some belief in the media. I didn't realize it was so controlled and manipulated as we're finding out now. This is, we're all seeing how deep censorship goes and what these media companies are capable of, just completely ignoring narratives that we're finding, just what we're finding now, that the whole narrative about this thing, the virus coming from a Wuhan lab, was talked about in some circles early on, but we're just now seeing it surface into to the mainstream media. And, if you even talked about it back then, a few months ago, you would be, your account would be deleted, or you would be shunned and shamed and all of this stuff. So I think the hearings are really relevant because they talk about the truth embargo, the media manipulation. At that time, in real time, I knew it was there, but I didn't understand to the extent that it was. So I was naive. I thought we were going to get some sort of, good press, so to say. And when it was all said and done, I was like, oh my God, this is the world we live in. It sucks. Because this was in Washington, D.C., two blocks from the White House. The former members of Congress, even the Congress members were like, in the middle of the hearings, were like, this is crazy. Why is the media treating the subject matter like this? Why are they making up lies? Why are they doing this? Representative Bartlett, he called it out in the middle of the hearings a couple of times. He's like, let me read the latest news. this is crazy, and we're in real time looking at these news articles coming out in real time that are completely false and fake. It's an eye opener for me at that time. Continues to be. I've been in this field now, doing this type of work for many years prior to this citizen hearing, but since continuing. So I've got my eye on the prize. I'm kind of watching and seeing how all this is playing out. And that's why any of the media stuff that we do see coming out now, Jeremy's doing an amazing job. Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon, these guys are doing a really good job of getting it out there. But we do have to question, why now? And why is the media actually covering this subject now in this form and fashion? And I know Lou and Chris are presenting it in a to Congress to get them to move, and these people who are in high positions in government to take action. They're positioning the narrative as a threat, that this is a threat to our airspace. And they're doing that intentionally to get them to take action, to take a move, because our government leaders and the press really only operate on a fear-based motives. So if it creates fear, then they'll put it out there. And that's, and lucky for us, Lou and Chris, I don't think they have any intentions of perpetuating that story once it gets out. But I've talked to Chris, and he said, it's the only, first things first is we have to get acknowledgement of the phenomenon. There's such a stigma and a wall put up between people that they won't even acknowledge it. So, unfortunately, the only thing that's going to get these, you know, old fart politicians to listen is to shake them up and put it in the sense of, you know, this could be a national security issue. This could be a threat. So I understand the angle that they're pushing to move things. But again, it's just sad that our media and politicians and our government really only take action in a negative-based narrative, which sucks. Yeah,
I do want to circle back around to that idea. Mm-hmm. But just to finish off here about the citizens' hearing on disclosure, what did you have any major takeaways from the citizens' hearing?
Well, the major takeaway was we are in a truth embargo. The media is manipulating the narrative, and it's very hard to get the truth out, even when you present it in such a grounded, you know, we did have a few people in the audience wearing tinfoil hats. That was fun and exciting, but that's what all the media focused on. You know, they didn't focus on these incredible heroes. The testimony, the witnesses, the Congress members, the conversation, the dialogue, when you sit and listen to the actual testimony and evidence, this is serious stuff. This is game changing. The things that are happening are game changing for humanity, and just the concepts and ideas. That we're not alone is such a, as Danny Sheehan put it, it's such a worldview switch that would have incredible, I believe, positive, some negative ramifications, as Richard Dolan goes into in his book, AD, After Disclosure, but mostly positive. So that in itself, just the idea and the concept of we're not alone and what that would do to world politics, to religion, to belief systems. It is the biggest topic on the planet, the biggest, subject matter that we all should be having the conversation about. And the citizen hearing lays it all out there.
Yeah. And, you know, I think even though the media took a pass somewhat on the citizens hearing, I know a lot of people that got activated, you can say, by that event and in the field now because of it. So, I mean, it was still a pretty tremendous event and had a huge impact, even if we're not, you know, seeing it so like in your face, but it certainly did. Cause again, the whole tweet storm thing and everything that went along with the event. I know a lot of people got involved in the subject actually because of that event. So,
great.
You know, major thanks to you, Jeremy, and everybody who participated and made it happen. And I guess you said you can't get into some of the weird stuff that happened, right? You had some kind of pushback there.
Yeah, it's better if I don't. Let's just say there's a lot of high strangeness in many areas.
When you start. Did you get any kind of like Men in Black stuff or like just weird?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, man. One day. Tell me when we get off the call.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's pretty incredible. But now I do want to go back to, you said you had an experience. Are you open to sharing that?
Yeah. I mean, I've had several since, but the initial one that got me into this was, it was in the middle of the day and I saw, as I said, I was in Burbank and I had a sighting of about 30 to 40, these little small white dots. It was about 45 minute event that I just watched and sat there and was like, what is this? And I was looking around to see if people were seeing it. And I'm like, this is crazy. There's something in the sky, clearly not balloons. And clearly not airplanes. And then I was trying to, you know, talk myself through all of the possibilities. Is it stars? Is this some kind of astral phenomenon, that cosmic thing, and are we getting anything from the sun hitting the angle, or, you know, I was just trying to figure it out. And at the end, I was like, I don't know what I saw. And I wanted to try to figure it out. So I went online and started searching, and circled back to, you know, Stephen Greer and the Disclosure Project, and also to many of the similar videos and sightings that people had posted up to that time. And I found stuff in Mexico and in other posts. Again, this was 2007, so all the video that we had still, I know people are talking about the bad video nowadays, but I mean, it was really bad back then. But I found enough footage and enough of the conversation, like I said, circling back to Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, that convinced me that, you know, something is going on here and I need to do more research, which I did. So I was, you know, for the next, from 2007 to 2010, really, I was, you know, all out just going and digging under every rock, looking under every rock I could on the, about the phenomenon, interviewing people who claim to have had been brought on ships, and the abduction scenarios, and reading books. And that was really, you know, I was weaponizing my curiosity, as Jervy says, and really getting as much information about it as I could. And all roads led to what I saw was probably most likely some sort of, you know, extraterrestrial or extra dimensional event. And since then, when you dive deep into that subject matter, I've had some unusual encounters, and they continue to, you know, my worldview continues to get turned upside down. Every time I think I've figured this thing out, something happens, or some weird coincidence or something. And then I'm like, okay, here we go. A whole new set of reference points and different things. So I have to say, it's my belief that this is not limited to ETs, what we understand as ETs. This is a much bigger phenomenon. And I think any of the researchers that really dive into it will tell you the same thing. The lights in the sky and the idea of spacecraft coming from another planet is just the tip of the iceberg of what is actually going on. And I make no claims to really understand what's actually going on. I just like diving into all of it and exploring as much as I can.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the ET hypothesis is like the gateway drug. That's like, you know, the first kind of like, oh, you know,
totally.
And I understand that, you know, when you first see something like that, the first thing that comes to your mind a lot of the times is ET, because of all the media that's been going on for several decades. But as far as experiences, you know, I've often talked about contact experiences and close encounters as, you know, something of an awakening experience, because, you know, you have an encounter like that, it really shatters your idea of your preconceived reality and makes you start to question everything, kind of like how you mentioned, you know, you started digging in. Same thing happened to me. It was the same time, 2007. Yep. And you know, quite a journey. And I think when you get really deep into everything, you realize the deeper stuff, the consciousness, OBEs, NDEs, psychic phenomenon, anomalous mental phenomenon, whatever you want to call it, and how all this stuff is kind of tied into that. And you know, even you know, Ray Hernandez, who had the Free Foundation, which is now the CCRI, the Contact and Consciousness Research Institute, which was the Edgar Mitchell Foundation. You know, they brought together that terminology for the contact modalities. And I thought that was really cool, because it has the wheel, and it has, you know, like contact here and near-death experiences, and then out-of-body experiences and channeling and all these different things that kind of lead to this, you know, consciousness being the center point, you know, including synchronicities. And getting So, you know, you have a show on Gaia called Interview with Extra Dimensionals. How did how did that come to be?
Well, when I was diving deep into the evidence-based research, you know, which is, I would say, mostly the citizen hearing and that the military encounters and what we have to prove to myself that this is a real phenomenon, which we had tons of evidence and testimony about that. You're like, what's next? What's next? What else is going on? Why is this happening? You continue to question. I think it's like you said, the gateway drug, the ET thing is just the beginning of a much bigger picture. And I continue to do research and talk to people and experiencers. And we used to have in my office every first Tuesday of the month, we had a get together called the ET Media Group, ET Meetup Media Group, which we invited people in the industry, film industry, to come and participate in a monthly meetup, talking about the phenomenon, having special guests. You know, Richard Dolan and Senator Gravelle and many others came to share and do presentations during these times. And it started from a small, you know, 5 to 10 person group to we had like 80 to 100 people there. I had a big studio so I could house everybody. And it was fun times. And I had, we had people like channelers, Daryl Anka and Wendy Kennedy and Nora Harold. They came and I had no idea really. I'd known about channeling and heard of the phenomenon, but I didn't really put it two and two together to think that it was connected. And one time I was sitting with Wendy and we were talking after the event, and she, you know, I was really intrigued about the abduction phenomenon. It baffled my mind, and I was curious and wanted to talk to as many people who had claimed to be on ships. Now it's my belief, it's not a claim. To me, I absolutely 100% believe that they were on the ships because of their experiences, the testimony, and the multiple testimonies from different people around the world who talk about the same types of things happening to them. And it's no coincidence. And then if you look at books like from John Mack and others who, and Barbara Lamb and her regression work, it's just the phenomenon is and the details are just too connected to just throw it off to chance or this is just something that, you know, that these people are having these collective experiences. Anyways, Wendy was telling me about her experience, and then she said somewhere in the conversation, she said, it's a soul contract. And that's what really sparked my curiosity again. And I was like, well, wait a minute, that's the most logical explanation I could think. Because at the time, the abduction scenario, I was trying to make sense of it. I was like, well, if this was such a nefarious thing that these people were taken against their free will, and, you know, they'd be given information or, you know, Travis Walton's experience. There's another gentleman, Chris, who talked about how terrifying this experience was, but yet they healed his Crohn's disease. Another Chris gentleman. Bledsoe. Yeah, Chris Bledsoe. Yeah. So, you know, his Crohn's disease was healed. There's another famous abduction case where they got, you know, he was a heavy smoker, but they cleaned out his lungs, took all the tar and stuff and gave it to him in a little thing. And, you know, he was like, it stunk really bad. But, you know, you hear just constant those stories. This is at the time of people having spontaneous healings, miracles happening. And to me, that was like, well, why would I go through the trouble if I was an ET to heal you, to fix you? And then go through the trouble of putting you back in your room, and then trying to erase your memory as much as they could to make sure that you didn't feel any of the traumatic things that happened. That's what we do to animals that we're trying to preserve and keep in the wild. That's how, you know, we tag them, we track them. We're trying to give them vitamins and nutrition to keep a dying species from going extinct. So that seemed like the most logical explanation was it was a sole contract, meaning that the people who these things are happening to on a soul level before incarnating into this reality, they've chosen to or allowed for this to happen. Didn't make sense for them in now in real time, but many of the abductees who spent time doing spiritual work or going into a more of a, you know, connecting within instead of being afraid of their experiences, but actually asking, connecting, they come to the realization, oh, they did sign up for this, these experiences, and they had the power to stop them whenever they wanted. For example, Kim Carlsberg, famous abductee, who, when she finally got so sick of these things happening to her night after night, and she said that enough is enough, and she commanded in a way that this, I don't want this to happen anymore, it stopped. And that's, we've heard that on multiple occasions. So to me, the phenomenon didn't seem to be a nefarious one like many people were making it out to be. And then that sparked my curiosity, and I was like, okay, can we get more into this, Wendy? And she goes, yeah, I channel, you know, a collective group from the Palladians called, you know, the Ninth Dimensional Palladian Collective, and maybe you can talk to them. They have a lot to say. And that's when it started. So it was like, interesting. If there's a technology to communicate with these beings and ask them directly what the hell's going on, why not take that opportunity? And then I realized it's not limited to just Wendy and Nora and Daryl, but there's a whole gamut of people that are able to go into a trance in a sense and channel and bring through these this consciousness, different consciousnesses from throughout the galaxy and multiverse, and to have a conversation directly with them. I'm like, why is nobody doing this? This is amazing. You know, even if it's complete BS, you can't ignore what's being said. And, you know, so if you don't believe in the channeling phenomenon, if you think that's whatever, that's fine. But when you actually look and listen to what is being said and you take those, I call tools, because these beings are giving us tools of how to navigate reality. And when you connect them to the same old teachings from our indigenous cultures, from the native traditions, who go into trances and through either plant medicine ceremony or sweat lodges, depending on the tribe. They use the same modalities to go into a trance and to bring back information. And that information is a big basis for many of their cultures. And many cultures are based on how they navigate reality from their understandings of reality through talking to these extra dimensional beings. So there's a correlation between what was being said in my interviews, as well as just ancient tradition. And it all seemed to fit. Everything fit like a glove.
And so that's why you chose the title Extra Dimensional, because I'm sure a lot of people going on to Gaia, they're right. Like, oh, wow, you know, that's pretty, you know, most people are still in that extraterrestrial ideology.
Yeah, it was actually, I think it was in the interview with Wendy. I don't think I had it in the actual interview, but that I posted, but they actually suggested, they said, well, maybe you might want to use the term extra dimensionals instead of extraterrestrials, because technically we're not extraterrestrials. In one sense we are, but that's a very limited way of looking at the phenomenon. So that's, in the show, the original title was ET, it was Interview with ET, Extraterrestrial, but I changed it per suggestion by the Palladians. and it stuck, and that's what I've been going with. And it's kind of, you know, Ed, you're like, who's Ed? You know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, for me, channeling was something that I'm always kind of like on the fence about. I like to keep an open mind and take everything with a grain of salt. But even with that, I was always pretty blown away by Daryl Anka and Bashar.
Yeah, you know, he's a good one. Yeah.
Because I was like, wow. I mean, if this guy is just making this up, he's damn good. But I'm convinced that he's tapping into something, you know, whether if you want to call it universal mind or, you know, higher self or, you know, all of these different concepts we have to kind of point to the direction of something beyond your normal functioning mind. Really impressive. And some of the stuff that, you know, it's like, you know, again, even if you're skeptical of it, you know, it's a really great exercise in opening your mind. Because there's some concepts there that I'm like, wow, and you'll just, you know, just, you know, hearing it will shift the way that you see reality. Really, it's real. It's pretty incredible. You know,
and I think that, I think that's where it's healthy. Skepticism is healthy. And I think it is good to definitely, you don't have to take the whole thing in, all of it. You know, there's a lot of story that comes with the Daryl and the Bashar presentation, but you don't have to. It's like the story, and it's this or that, you know. And that's why I kind of like my show, and I offer the buffet of channelers, because it is different. Different people are gonna, and different stories are gonna resonate with different people. But the underlining, the actual information that's being given on how to integrate some of the teachings into your life, just the basic stuff, like follow your passion. What I've noticed the through line through the whole series, it's really about self-empowerment and taking these ideas and concepts, and how can you adapt them into your own life to create a better life for yourself, so you can be empowered and navigate, and not, and, you know, less judgment. In a sense, it's very religious, in a sense, but without all the heavy religion too. It's a story. You can use it for good, but then when you get caught up in the story, it ends up, then you take sides, and, oh, well, this happened and this happened, so the, you know, that there's good aliens or bad aliens, or there's angels and demons, and, you know, there's all this this or that, which, if you buy into the story, you're going to get caught up in, and then you kind of miss the message, so to say. And it's been my passion and my following all this stuff to really understand there's a lot of flavors to this phenomenon. And you don't have to say, you know, we can all individually navigate and go into and lean into the specific flavor that we individually like. I'm a fan of Daryl and Bashar, and I like that story too, but I'm not going to go so far to say that his is the right story and somebody else, what they're saying, is the wrong story, because many other people resonate with these other stories. But the basic through line through all of it is, let's just respect each other. You know, the golden rule, do unto others what I would like to do unto myself. Follow your passion, do what you love, have integrity with the people you interact with. You know, don't lie, don't cheat. You know, these are just basic concepts that I think are in all religions, it's just giving it a new twist, you know, extra dimensional and extraterrestrial package, if that's what it takes for people to actually sit down and listen to some of these concepts, that's great. That wasn't my intention initially. I would just wanted to know what the ETs are doing. Yeah. What's all this going on here? But what they're, it's funny, because a lot of what they, for me, I had this evidence-based reality that I was looking at all the pieces of the puzzle and everything. And when I started diving into the show and doing these interviews, all the little holes started filling in. It started making sense. And for me, that was just really satisfying because, one, I was like, how do these people, I've been researching this for a long time, looking at all the evidence. And here is a group of people that haven't been looking at the evidence, but yet their answers make so much sense. What they're saying, it fills in all these gaps and these holes that just by logic and default, when you look at it from that perspective, well, that makes sense that it would be this way. It makes sense that, you know, the abduction phenomenon, and the soul contracts, as I mentioned before, you know, that it just makes sense that that's what would be going on, instead of it being this nefarious thing that a lot of people like to default to. It's against our free will and this stuff. And it is to a certain extent, but you have to look again, take the higher perspective. Why is this, these other things, if it is against our free will, well, why would they heal Chris's Crohn's disease? Why would they put him back? Why would his life change positively instead of negatively? And this is this on and on and on. That's the abduction phenomenon tends to show these types of positive changes in people's lives instead of negative.
Yeah, it's, you know, pretty surprising that the free organizations that I mentioned before with Ray Hernandez, that's now CCRI, their free foundation, the book they did called Beyond UFOs, it's like an academic study of experiencers. Mm-hmm. And you'd be really surprised at the numbers. They said, you know, for people with
froze there for a second. Let's see. Unfreeze.
Disturbed or scared or even traumatized at first, they went on to see the contact as a positive impact on their life. And a lot of them came to some of those ideas of like the soul contract, or I think Dolores Cannon had touched on that as well in some of her books.
And, yeah, Dolores is great.
Yeah. And so that's a really... You know, I always go back to the question of abductions, and, you know, the human mind comes in, you're like, oh, okay, is there a bad part of this? Is it good, bad, or is it beyond good and bad? Right. You know, I'm wondering if, you know, we're going to get like direct in your face answers about that ever, you know, beyond like, a, you know, if the, like there's an open contact scenario, that would be pretty incredible. But
yeah. I think it's coming.
It's incredible to see that the time that we're in. But before I wanted to touch back on the threat narrative thing, actually, but I wanted to because you mentioned Stephen Greer and you had your own experience. Have you ever had a CE5 or tried it?
Oh yeah. 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 That was one of the sort of sealing the deal for me was I went out in 2010 to Rio Rico, Arizona, and I did
Stephen Greer's. I was there.
Oh, really? In 2010?
Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah,
with Greer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were there, so you know, you experienced some of the things that came through on those nights. And I remember being in the back. I was trying to debunk it. I was like, is he, you know, shooting flares and, you know, some of the claims that were going on. But then I remember before it was the last night, Saturday or Sunday night, anyways, whichever night it was, the last night before he even started, he was just starting to get into a spiel and, you know, okay, this, we're going to do the meditations. And then I looked off to my left and I saw two red dots in unison as a sunset, and it was flying. Did you see those too?
No, but I had a very, very, very similar experience, dude. And I've told this in my videos before. This is incredible, dude. No way.
I bumped the guy next to me. I'm like, look over there. And these two dots are, you know, per the distance that they were at, they, you know, for the size, you gotta imagine that they're way out there. You know, these are, they look like, if you look at a plane, but they were traveling way faster than any jet or any plane across the sky was going, and in unisons. And they were going kind of like this, and then this one disappeared, and this one got to this point, and then it disappeared. Yeah. And the group around me, I elbowed the guy, and then we all started, Greer still talking. And so, so I was like, I don't think Greer, is engineering that. Plus obviously there were other things that popped in those nights that people saw. Some people saw more than others. I remember seeing just flashes of lights.
Flash bulbs,
which I see still now. I see that a lot.
So that was kind of my
coming out of the closet moment, because I was very, of my career in Street Fighter and these other things, I was kind of worried, well, what are people going to think? They're going to think that I'm into this alien thing.
But after
that weekend, I was like, this stuff is too grand to not talk about. So I documented every experience, every light in the sky and everything, and sort of went over and highlighted a lot of the things that Greer had said about the secrecy and, the government stuff. And then I loved, who was the crop circle guy?
Colin Andrews
and his
Richard Hoagland was there.
Hoagland was there. Colin Andrews, his story about the crop circle, right? This consciousness connection of having this idea, and then the next, the next day, the crop circle of what they all meditated on was there. So that, I made all these notes basically, and then I put out on my website, on my blog at the time. I was like, I'm going to put this out. Maybe the world will think I'm crazy and I may never work in Hollywood again, but I don't care. This is too important to ignore. I've got to put this out there. So yeah, that was it. And then that's when I came out of the cosmic closet, so to say. And ever since, I've been full on, pushing, this idea that we're not alone, since then.
That's crazy, dude. I probably met you there, inadvertently.
How many of us were there? There was like over 100, right? Or
almost 200.
200. That's right. Yeah.
That's so funny that my experience there.
Oh, I was just gonna say. Since then, I've done many C5s on my own as well as with other groups, where we've had similar strange phenomenon happen. So it's not limited to just what Greer's doing. Obviously, I think you probably know that too.
Yeah, I'm actually really involved in the CD5 movement.
Oh, great.
We'll talk about that sometime. I actually, right before I went to that event, I started the CE5 stuff on social networking, and I got all the CE5 people together on Facebook and created the first CE5 social networking groups.
Oh, cool.
And I've done, a ridiculous amount of CE5.
Nice.
Really incredible experiences. My family was present during that were CE5 and some that were not CE5. But that event, I actually, real briefly, it was actually the first night, and, right when we started the first meditation on the outside, the outside part, I saw like a ruby red orb appear, like a little smaller than a basketball maybe. And it was like imprinted onto reality. That's the best way I can describe it. If you're like looking, if you're staring into a light, like a bright light, and then you look away and there's like an image like this, it looked like that, and it was ruby red scintillating, and it was maybe 15 feet away from me and maybe 10 feet above the ground. And wow. I'm thinking to myself, and it was right near the group. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm probably just seeing something because I want to see something because I'm here at this event, I'm participating. Even though I had contact before that, and I had CE5 before that, but I'm thinking this particular thing, I'm probably just imagining maybe. And then like 15 seconds later, Dr. Greer takes his laser and circles the exact area and said, there's just a ruby red orb here. And I was like, okay, that's the confirmation I was looking for. Because like when I went there, I was like, I wanted to see if this guy is the real deal with the CE5,
right.
The way he was talking about contact, was exactly how I had experienced it before. So yeah. I was convinced that what he was saying was legitimate and he had firsthand knowledge. So that was like a major confirmation for me. And, you know, pretty incredible. So yeah, that's so funny that you were there, man. That's so awesome, man. So it's like, we met before somewhere.
Yeah.
This is our
totally.
Second meeting.
Exactly.
That's so cool. Yeah. But, I know.
Well, I think you were going to circle back about the, like the threat narrative, right? And you want to connect Greer in that. Yeah.
Well,
I do have some stuff to say about that.
There. Okay. There we go. Just go light it off.
Yeah, so I'm sure your audience and you and we are all aware of the old CIA documents and the things about Project Bluebeam, and we know that it's been in the cards, the house of cards, for government to use an idea of an alien threat in order to gain more control, and I think that's. Greer is vocally talking about this idea in his latest documentary, C5, but really just the past few days, he's on the internet talking about this stuff. And it's, I understand where he's coming from, and I absolutely think we should be proceeding with caution. But personally, I've met Chris Mellon. I know my buddy Jeremy, and I know these guys are solid people and would never try to intentionally propagate such a grandiose, negative idea. Now, the people they work for and the people that's feeding them this information, who knows what their agendas are, but I know in my heart of hearts that these people are good people. I've never met Leslie Kane, but I met Nick Pope, and I know these guys, and they're not nefarious, evil people that are going to try to, propagate this evil agenda onto the public. Again, I don't agree with the approach, but through Chris's words, this is the only way we're going to get these people's attention. So he in his mind, he's pushing this sort of threat agenda package in order to get the attention of the people in governments, because they won't listen in any other way. So anyways, there's a lot of different groups and different agendas and different perspectives. But when we go as far as where Greer is going right now in sort of calling everybody and saying this is a negative agenda and all this stuff, in a way, we're also creating fear. It's actually creating almost more fear and polarity from these two different sides. So my suggestion would say there's truth to what Greer is saying. There's truth to what these other guys, Jeremy and everything, are pushing a specific narrative, because that's what the media will listen to. And that's the only thing that they'll take. And I think there's some strategy going on behind the scenes that they know this. They know it's not a threat. They know it's not going to at these ETs, and they probably also know that the government or certain agendas could play it the other direction. But they probably feel confident now that it's not going to go that direction, and let's just keep pushing and pushing and pushing this. Because there's different news agencies that will take an interview from Jeremy, chop it up and make it all sound scary and everything. And then you watch another interview on a local news channel, and he's all about, let's empower each other. This is nothing to be afraid of. This has been happening for a long time. So it really depends on the news channel. And these different media outlets are manipulating the narrative in their own way. But when you listen carefully to the larger message, and you try to look at all of the different interviews that Lou, Chris, Jeremy, and others are perpetuating, it's there about empowering and informing the public and the people, which is not a fear-based narrative at all. So it's complicated, and I don't want to throw Greer under the bus, and I don't want to throw anybody else under the bus. This is different perspectives. And I think, yes, proceed with caution. But it's really about getting as much information to the public as possible so they can choose for themselves. And I think the evidence, the testimony, the citizen hearing is a great place. Look at all those people that have had encounters. Are they afraid? No, they're excited. We need this information yeah. out. This is not a scary phenomenon. And the more people that get educated and informed about the history, about all these different encounters, then the people themselves won't be able to be duped by any kind of false narrative or anything. But the first thing first is we have to get the people to acknowledge that there is something going on here, that we're not alone, that there is a phenomenon engaging with humanity. And let's first acknowledge that. And then next, okay, well, what are their intentions? What's going on here? And any researcher, any newbie researcher, when you start to look into this phenomenon, you'll realize, oh, this has been going on since the beginning of time. You know, our indigenous cultures have yeah. all kinds of records of these things happening. And it's not a negative. It can be. I mean, look at Skinwalker Ranch and some of the things going on there. But still, it's not this world's takeover. There are pockets of negative encounters. But there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that shows that this phenomenon is positive, and that we are, once we can engage in this phenomenon in a non-fear-based setting, when we can actually go in and say, okay, I want to engage with this phenomenon. I want to have a conversation, or I want to talk to it, so to say. Then you take the fear out, and then you can actually, when you start engaging with it, like you and I have been doing with either CU5 or medicine ceremonies or just plain encounters, and you can have a conversation with the phenomenon in the different ways it shows up. It's not scary. It's not demonic, and they're not going to take over and drink my blood. It's something that I can engage with. I can have a conversation with. I can receive information, and I can send out information. And I've done that. I've engaged with mantis beings, and I've received a lot of information. And I've also commanded and taken my power and said, okay, enough is enough for now. And this is all I can handle right now. Thank you. Goodbye. You know, and then the phenomenon goes away, and then it comes back when I'm ready to have some more. So it is really just right now we're in this unknown territory for a lot of people. And my suggestion is for like us having this conversation, the more we can have this conversation, the more we can take the fear out of it and empower people with knowledge and evidence and testimony, then the brighter the future is for us engaging with it. And what my biggest thing is, what can we learn from it, right? Especially obviously the technology, but not just the technology. There's a lot of aspects to it that we can learn.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you're talking about, being able to engage this other intelligence, the human capacity to be able to do that of itself is almost as transformative of an idea that there's these other intelligences engaging with us. So it's really, again, like you said, empowering. And I think with Greer, I think where Greer went wrong, in my opinion, was that, he was personally, calling people out and calling them names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without evidence,
Yeah, exactly.
I think he went, I think he's genuinely concerned and he believes it, but I think he went a little bit too far.
Sure.
Like Lou seems like a straight up guy. Everything he's been saying, he hasn't been lying. It's been legitimate information. And again, him and Christopher Mellon, they seem like genuine people that they're just trying to get this out there. And, these are Disclosure Project witnesses, they should be, welcomed and supported. They've done incredible work, and look where we are now because of them. And, I know, you know, people might argue, well, you know, they've only gotten this far because it's part of the agenda. But, you know, they've been denying Lou, saying, no, he never worked for ATIP. You know, there wouldn't be that pushback against Lou Elizondo and Christopher Mellon if this was all part of some grand plan. You know, they'd say, oh, look, right here, it's Lou Elizondo. He directed ATIP. You know, but they've been doing the opposite. And and you can see the kind of like the schism going on in the background. Everybody's trying to get their shit together, basically. They're just trying to hold it off as long as they can while they figure out what they can do. And it's at the tipping point now. I think we're at the point where it's there's no going back from now. And really
this past couple weeks have been really cool, huh? Just do it.
And Jeremy has something else he's going to drop in the next few days, I think, either today or the next few days. And it's like, you know, the strategy that they have going on, not for nothing, him and George Knapp, they are killing it with the, you know, 1-2 punch with Lou Elizondo and Christopher Mellon. It's like, you know, and I do really wonder what, you know, the people that have been gatekeeping the UFO reality, what they're, you know, how they're going to kind of push back against this, because I don't think they're just going to, you know, give up their game, you know? So I wonder.
Yeah. And that's wise to, I think we should proceed with caution in that sense, because you know, you've been in this just as long as I have, maybe longer. You know, there are narratives, there are agendas. And again, the more, you know, everybody's screaming every time I repost, you know, Jeremy or Chris or Lou, they're like, this is all, you know, evil thing. And I'm like, if you know there's a boogeyman in the room and you're watching him, the boogeyman has no power over you. So I'm like telling everybody, just take a chill pill. If you're aware that there could be some nefarious intentions to all these disclosures, you know, when you're aware, it can't do anything to you. So take a chill pill. Let it play out how it's going to play out. And just know that that's a possibility. Don't ignore it. Don't say no, you know, Greer is this or that. And, you know, which again, I agree. He shouldn't be calling names and these, he has a lack of evidence. But the concern that he has, that I think we all should proceed with caution. We all should have, that's just healthy skepticism. Like you were saying with the channelers, that's a healthy way to look at anything. But to throw the baby out with the bathwater is not healthy on either side, you know? So it's really about just proceed with caution, be excited for these disclosures, be excited for the interwebs to be having this conversation. I certainly am. And I don't want to put any more fear on it. I think it's actually doing the opposite, is when we start saying, oh, it's going to be a thing or an evil blue beam attack thing or whatever. You know, at this point, I think the general public is more educated than I think the, you know, the media overlords and the other people, can even imagine. And there's so much information out now that's being shared and spread that if they wanted to play that card, they can't. It's not playable at this point. There's just too many aware people, and we're seeing other things in our reality now being we're seeing people being played and heartstrings pulled and different agendas with the Corona thing and with, you know, vaccinations and everything else. We're seeing that. So there is a lot of fear because, well, look, they're doing this and they're doing that and this and that, but there's equally the same conversation on the other side saying, well, no, we're privy to this and we can see through these agendas and we can see what's happening clearly. So no, it's not, it can't happen in that way, in that scenario. And I think that's maybe where Greer might be getting lost in in some of this is that he doesn't understand how empowered the public is. This information is out there. The citizen hearing is available for everyone to go and check out and to share with their peers. So the idea that we're all going to be duped I'm sure they're going to try. I'm sure there's going to be something, and there'd probably be a small amount of people who might buy into the fear thing. But the majority of the people, I think, are really curious and they want to know. And they're like, yeah, I knew it. See, the UFO thing, it was real, you know? What are we going to learn now? What's next? What's exciting?
Yeah. Most people seem, if anything, all the people, you know, you have some that are saying, oh yeah, I knew it the whole time. There's others that are like, you know, they're super excited and they're curious and they're starting to engage the subject. Yeah. And then there's still just a few more who's like, this is the government's, you know, they're putting this out there and it's not real. They're just trying to get more funding or, you know,
right.
And so you have the debunkers out there, but very few. And their arguments look kind of silly.
Yeah.
It's funny to see how that role has switched, right? Where the UFO supporters or researchers used to kind of look like the odd one out. The debunkers now, they really look like the odd ones out. And it's really funny to see that switch in such a short time.
Totally. Yeah, we're in exciting times. And I think excitement and curiosity is the healthier approach. Skepticism, obviously, but really going into this subject matter with awe and amazement and fun. That's where I was, you know, 10 years ago. We both were probably, you know, having our experiences and just to continue that and just imagine the whole world where we were 10 years ago. This is going to be a really cool experience for the next 10 years to see how this all unfolds. And hopefully eventually having, you know, a telepathic communication with a red orb, that would be so cool, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, I love your work. I love what you do. I'm so happy that you were able to come on. And it's so funny, we went to the same event, Age of Synchronicity, right?
Yeah, totally.
Do you have any upcoming projects you could talk about or that you just want to briefly mention?
Yeah, briefly. So season 3 of Interview with Ed is in the works. And a lot of people have been asking for it. I get messages every day. We want to see season 3, want to see season 3. Unfortunately, Gaia has not picked it up yet. I think since COVID hit, it put everybody for a loop. And Gaia too, I think they've had to, they're rolling with the punches just like everybody is. So they haven't picked it up yet. I hope and cross my fingers that once I start releasing it on Vimeo and the public demand for it comes, then maybe they'll circle back and they'll pick it up. But either way, it's going to be available to the public on Vimeo on demand and on my website, interviewwithed.org. Go there, sign up for our mailing list, and any updates and things will be coming through that. And also working on another project simultaneously that revolves around crystal skulls. And that's a whole nother kind of rabbit hole to go down. But all I have to say is that they are in interconnected with our extra-dimensional cosmic family, as well as our indigenous elders and teachers from many different nations across the world. All have I feel like the skull is the connecting point that grounds in. It's a physical manifestation of what this phenomenon represents, and it's not limited to extraterrestrials. It covers the whole gamut. We even had a Sasquatch encounter with the skull last month. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun one to dive into. But that's probably not going to be out for a while because there's a lot to it. There's a lot to unpack, and it is going to be a feature film. So probably another year or so before we get that one out.
And do you have to be in character, or can I ask you to do something from Ken Masters?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Could you do like one of the sounds from Ken Masters?
Oh,
from
Street Fighter? Okay. Let's see. All right, bring it on. I'm ready for you.
That's something that's so crazy, man. That is so awesome. But again, thank you so much for coming on, man. And everybody, right, make sure to check out the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, the YouTube channel. They're uploading videos every week. And, it's been great having you on, Ruben, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, James. Talk to you soon.
Take care, man.
Let's see. Stop.